Welcome to Access to Perspectives Conversations, the podcast for bridging academic landscapes. At Access to Perspectives, we provide novel insights into the communication and management of research. Our goal is to equip researchers around the world with the skills and enthusiasm they need to pursue a successful career. You will get insights around the topics of scholarly reading, writing and publishing, career development, project management, and research integrity, all embedded into open science practices. Learn more about our work at accesstoperspectives.org.
All right, welcome everybody. We are back with another fantastic reviewer credits LinkedIn Live. And this time, it's not just reviewer credits. This time we're doing it in partnership with Dr. Joe Haverman from Access to Perspectives. So I'll introduce myself quickly. My name's Gareth. I work with reviewer credits, making content, doing these kinds of events, helping researchers around the world to understand the peer review process. Maria is here as well. Maria Machado, everybody knows Maria. So we're going to hand over quickly now to Jo so that she can introduce herself and say a few things about what we're going to be talking about today before we go to Maria. Jo, how are you doing?
Thanks, Gareth. I'm doing well. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic.
So great to be here with you guys. I know that you've done a few sessions before, and I'm mostly honored to be able to join today. So let's get this party started.
Absolutely. Maria, how are you today? Everything going well?
Everything good.
All right. So Maria.
So that's good.
Maria's going to introduce the event and tell us a little bit about what we're talking about today. And don't forget, if you're listening to this on LinkedIn, you can put your comments into the comments on LinkedIn and we'll see them here on the chat in StreamYard. We'll be able to answer them and we hope that you'll have questions about our topic today, which is, Maria?
It's about resources for peer review. So I have been taking some courses and I have been auditing some things and reading some blogs and looking at some videos. Some of them are really good. Some of them not so much. So it would be good to have some sort of a guideline for what is out there. What's open access, first of all, what's not, what you can access free of charge. What is actually good value, what teaches you what you want to learn, and who else should be involved instead of just publishers in training reviewers. Because more and more, there are lots of resources available from preprint servers, but not a lot specifically on what reviewers need to know.
And we wanted to work with Access to Perspectives. We wanted to work with Joe because Access to Perspectives are leaders in open science and open data. And that's the issue, right, Joe? There's loads of resources out there. There's loads of content out there. There's loads of things about peer review that we see online. But how do we know which ones to use and which ones to share in our teaching and which ones to recommend to young researchers who want to learn about the peer review process?
Exactly that. It's so confusing for us practitioners and service providers, and mostly so for researchers and also librarians and editors. So I'm a member of several communities of practice that sooner or later dig into the issue of peer review, how there's recurring, thankfully so, discussion around the biases that are inbuilt in regional specific editorial boards and like with journals who aim to be globally inclusive, but then where the setup of the editorial boards are not, and thereby cannot be in knowing of the region specifics that exist in other parts of the world outside, let's say, Central and Western Europe and North America. And there's a whole lot of the world to be considered. And also, of course, there's regional communities and practitioners who've set up their own standards. And there's long existing standards that exist since the beginning of scholarly communication. And my personal wish for this exercise I'm presenting here is that we can come back to a common understanding what peer review is and should be, and how we can ensure that everybody engaged in science communication can see it as such and can help to keep it as such, which is to be supportive feedback amongst colleagues to each other's works. And yes, it's also meant as a quality assuring standard, but it shouldn't be a bottleneck for getting research information published. And that's what it's become in the past. I think 10 years, it's become quite extreme with the publication pressure. And that's why we're having this discussion.
So we've been collecting resources, basically, right? And we've been sorting those resources, and we've been hopefully starting the process of sharing those resources with the community so that there will be a standalone resource of peer review content that anyone can access. And we're going to curate it too, right, Maria? We're going to go through a bunch of steps to figure out what's best about the peer review content that's out there.
Yeah, exactly. So a whole list of things that just tells you where you can find resources, not very useful, unless you have a way for people to assess whether it was useful for them, to grade them, if you will, to rate them for their usefulness, if you would use them in teaching, for teaching your undergraduate students, if you would recommend a colleague, if you yourself found it helpful, if you had doubts that were actually answered from going through videos, blogs, courses, whatever it was, or if there is something that we're missing, if there is something that needs to be there that isn't. So we're kind of asking people to get us as much as they possibly can on peer review resources, general in their own field, so that we can figure out standards and best practices.
So if you've got a comment, or you've got a question, or you've got an issue with peer review that you'd like to be addressed, or you'd like to learn about content that addresses, please give us a comment. Please give us a shout out. You don't have to do it now. We're throwing this open to the wider community in open research, and we're asking basically for contributions to the project, right, Joe? Where are we at with it now?
Well, I think next week we agreed upon we will share a proposal for this project to the community. The whole thing is meant to be designed as a community source, so every scholarly stakeholder is invited to contribute. It will, like, every person who contributes much or less will be acknowledged according to the credit taxonomy, best practice in scholarly publishing and acknowledgement, will be acknowledged by name or GID ID, if existent, in continuously to be revised in iterations of that document, and to allow everyone to see how it evolves, to acknowledge the collaboration, and also ensure ownership by a wide community, pretty globally inclusive, so that this is not to be understood by one or two institutions like the two represented here, but by community owned, and then let's see how that evolves. And every contributor and every institution is also mostly welcome to deviate any version of that process for their own purposes. So it's not something to put any institution or individuals on chains to, but we just want to initiate an informed discussion with actual reference points, which is the mapping of the resources, and from there develop standards. Like one minimum requirement or minimum understanding of peer review as a, like in my personal view, it's collegial feedback and amongst scholars. But then also in each possible scenario and capacity of its implementation, one of which can surely be journal dependent peer review, as has been established by a few publishers in recent years, for the purpose of quality assurance. And that can then also be specified alongside and defined with a minimum requirement of standards that are vital and guidance for reviewers to chime in and agree upon. And then, of course, research research discipline specifics, which surely vary from biology to psychology to economics to history, social sciences and humanities and so on.
The fundamental point being that there's no current unified standard for peer review. Like, every researcher understands peer review in a different way. Every journal, every publisher has different guidelines, has different expectations on their peer reviewers. So it's very confusing, especially for young researchers starting the process and being asked, right, Maria, to peer review a paper for the first time. And I know you're deeply involved in the peer review process. We all are, but you're working with papers all the time. Like, what are some of the issues that people face just trying to figure out how to do a peer review?
So one of the main issues is that people don't really know what scope peer review takes within the journal that they have been asked to review, or within the field. So, for instance, in humanities, I found that the peer review process is very, very intense. It can take months because usually the outputs are books. So sometimes the peer reviewer takes months to review one piece of research, and the contribution that they make are quite valuable to the final thing. But for instance, in science, if you take months to review a paper, then you're being pressed by the publisher because they want to publish. They publish short research articles that then are sent to many different people. So it kind of depends on the area that you're in, but that shouldn't mean that the quality of the review or that the scope of the review should vary as much as it does right now.
So these are issues that we all face, right, Joe? I mean, how are we gonna unify, or how are we gonna provide guidelines that can help people to cross unify all of the peer review process?
I'm a bit in a dark situation here, so apologies in advance. But I think it's all about crystallizing. Our earlier discussions went around, okay, let's distill from the existing information what we as a community who engages in this project can agree upon as a minimum standard, minimum viable approach, which we call peer review. And that can, of course, take on different forms. So our task would be, after sending out the proposal, which will most probably be released next week, we'll invite institutions, peer review actors, journals, journal editors, editorial boards, publishers to contribute to our list of resources, what they see missing, and there's already a lot. And also to engage in discussion and what they see from their perspective, hence existing perspective, what they see as the best approach for the particular purpose they're in charge of as a publisher, as an editor, as a librarian, as a researcher, junior or senior. So each of these groups, and then others, has their own and very specific understanding of how they need peer review to be understood in their own context. And I think that will shed a light, that will help other stakeholders also understand these specifics, and then bring us eventually, hopefully, towards a common understanding what we can agree upon. And not only as a definition, but also on a process, which is inclusive on several levels. I think we have a few questions in the chat already, but the moderation is all yours, Gerald.
Oh, no, well, please, let's go to the chat. Like, I can't see any questions, but I wanted to, yeah, like, Joe, can you see a question? Maria,
yeah,
can you see a question?
First of all, I'm really happy to see Duncan here. Can we unmute people so they can talk?
No, that we can't do that on this platform, unfortunately. We can just answer their questions if that's
or maybe
if
just
are putting questions.
Duncan is the president of an organization called EASE, which is helping journal editors as the main target group, but also open to other audiences. Oh, and he threw in a bit of a lengthy question. Let's get to that. So ease is something to look in because ease also provides a lot of resources on publishing, including peer review and also on repeats or repetitively. So enables and facilitates conversations. Okay, now Elisa had a question about how about different peer review models, double blind, open, and so on and so forth. Of course, that's like that's a must-have in the collection in the initial description of what we are looking at with peer review. And we will, like, not in the proposal document, but then in the to-be-further-developed document on the distilling best practices for peer review, also introducing the existing forms, of course. And I think reviewer credits and also ease and others have recently shared, well, I know that for a fact, have recently shared infographics on that same, also the history of peer review, since when are we looking at a process that we now understand as peer review, and that's like, I think, 400 years or something. And the process as we know today is only 50 or so years old. So it's quite a recently established process. So it's very much open to be tweaked to whatever we want it to be. And then also, warm welcome to Jamel and Shiri. Please apologize for pronunciation. Who's a, well, also a member of Review Credit and a journal editor in Tunisia. And now, Maria, do you want to read out Duncan's question? And
so what one of the things in Duncan's comment that I think could happen a lot more recently is that he said big publishers track what happens to papers rejected from their journals. And if the peer review process actually helps in them getting published elsewhere. And I think that that's one of the initiatives that the community has been having recently by tracking versions of preprints and where they end up, if they end up being published somewhere, if peer review reports are published or not, even if they are anonymized. So that's one of the things that I believe could help us in steering training, is whether people actually provide input and whether their input is welcomed and whether their input is then included into the final product, whether peer review actually improves what people are trying to disseminate. So exactly. That would be great to have, great resource to have.
You've been auditing some of these platforms already, right? Some of these training courses. As part of this project, we're starting to look at the available training courses in peer review, right?
Yeah, and some of them are really good, but they seem to be very general still. You do know what you shouldn't do. That's clear. But what you should do and up until where you should take your analysis is not that clear. People sometimes don't know if they should, you know, point to a data point in a graph and get annoyed by that, or if that's just too detailed for them to worry about. They don't know where to stop and where to start sometimes. The line between getting someone from the outside to view your paper and then getting someone's view on what you should do with your research is blurry, and it really shouldn't be.
Absolutely. I'm going to make two comments and I'm going to hand back to Joe. The first is that we really, really want this to be a community initiative from the ground up, from the community up to the publishers. So that's why we're doing this, and we're going to do other events like this to encourage people to get involved. And it won't be like one organization doing this. We need to work together as researchers and as trainers and educators to build this data resource, open resource of peer review content. And then hopefully we can work together also to curate that resource and decide together how useful the content that's out there actually is. And some of it's currently paywalled, some of it's currently behind website walls and whatnot, email sign-up walls, but not a lot. So far we've noticed, right, Joe, that much of the content that's out there, quick web search will convince you, is available to everybody. It's just not curated in one place, not looked at in one place so that we can decide what's useful and what's not in terms of understanding the peer review process and building a standard that everyone can agree to. Joe?
Yeah, I agree. And that's a pain, but also probably I would just put it out there as a claim, maybe a necessity. So let me explain. Because I'm a biologist, I did a major in evolutionary biology. And you know, evolution is a little bit chaotic. I think that's how I like it. For a purpose, because it allows creativity to thrive in all directions, and much of that is also going nowhere. But it's experimentation, innovation in its essence. And I think maybe every process, including or every what is peer review as a thing, like anything, should be treated as such, so that it can improve over time and adapt. Like, there's a theory by Darwin, which is known as the survival of the fittest, which is often misunderstood as the strongest and the strongest survives. And that's not true. The one who best adapts to a common current environment is that one to survive. And it doesn't have to be the strongest. It's often not the strongest. Look at the dinosaurs. They were huge. T-Rex was like massive, like, and also quite vicious. survive the beginning of time, so say on the time scale. Okay, I think I need to pause here.
No worries. Just mute yourself. It's all good. So our next steps with this project, we're going to release very soon like a database that we've started to put together containing existing peer review resources. As Joe mentioned, we're going to put like a little white paper out like over the next few days that explains the outcomes and the vision for this collective project that everybody will be free to look at, add to, comment on. We'll work on it. It's a live, evolving document. Duncan says, establishing global standards with a level of detail is tricky because of legitimate differences between subjects. But, as Duncan says, some standards within subjects would be a nice start. We totally agree. That's one of the goals for this. Let me just answer one of the other questions, which is about certification. That's one of the things that Reviewer Credits does, actually. So if you're signed up with us, if your journal is partnered with Reviewer Credits, and if it's not, why not? You can get certificates for your peer reviewers that way. And you see more and more people sharing their Reviewer Credit certificates on LinkedIn and other social media platforms. So that's a big positive. So Maria, we've got some other questions. I'll hand over to you. But yeah, we're gonna start to get a lot of this information out over the next few days and invite people to contribute as we build this database.
Sure. So idiosyncrasies that are specific to your subject area are perfectly fine. We just need to figure out if you within your subject area can agree to what is the threshold for rejecting, what is the threshold for accepting, what cannot be without a question accepted, what can be revised, what can, at which point does the reviewer interfere with research design more than they should, instead of just pointing out whether it's correct or not. Those little nuances can be different in different subject areas, but that shouldn't mean that you shouldn't have your own way of training, of standardizing, and of reaching a consensus with other people within your community, whether it's a journal publisher or a librarian or an editor or someone curating a preprint server. You would have to define what good is, what good quality is, and if that's what you're trying to achieve with peer review or not.
Yeah, I would like to add to this and come back to my comparison with evolution. We're proposing it to be really agile on a basis, and the basis is what we want to co-create with everyone who wants to engage in this. And then the agile part, some new norm to something that evolution has long done, is to be flexible and adaptable to whichever niche of the ecosystem you find yourself in to survive there, meaning with peer review, to adapt the process and the workflow and the decision making onto the specific institution in a particular country and a particular part of the world, with a particular research context and with the given stakeholders in that research context in that part of the world. So we don't want to define a rigid structure for each discipline or world region, but very much also invite to regional representatives to define their own standards. I'm personally engaged a lot in the African scholarly community. And also with pre-review and eLife, we've come up with a one approach to introduce open peer review. And you will find that resource also in our initial data set. And that was super interesting because African scholars face a lot of racial bias and often unknowingly so when they sit in their specific African and or country specific research environments. And then they send their submissions to, let's keep it general, Western editorial board who has no clue about the research infrastructure and the circumstances on the continent, let alone in a particular institution in a specific country, and then rejected on the basis of where their paper was submitted from. And that's not a good practice, but it's unfortunately relatively common still today. And this is a bias that we will hope to eradicate from happening by discussing this on a global scale also.
That's right. I mean, let's go to, we got some great questions and comments coming in. We're going to be inviting comments like in follow-up, of course, if you're listening to this and you want to think it through and put some comments on the LinkedIn like later on, that's also completely fine. Eliza says, some people would perhaps think that it's okay that peer review standards are different in different academic communities, as their practices and idiosyncrasies are different. What would you say to them, Maria?
I think it's perfectly fine. Nobody is trying to take this away from you. I think that we're just all trying to agree on what peer review is trying to do, whether you can actually see if the final product is better than what you started off with, if it is doing what it promises to do, basically, if it is contributing to advancement of knowledge. And that's just a very basic premise. Nobody is trying to figure out whether you should point out a data point or do some more stats or have guidelines for very strict things. It's just whether the peer review process as it is and whether you're training people as we're training them now is working, whether it could be improved and how it could be improved. Because more and more, we are asking a lot of different people than what we have been asking so far to do review, because it is necessary. It is necessary to have a kind of diversity, and it is necessary to have different perspectives from different parts of the world. Sometimes you need resources that are not openly or so easily available to you. So we are just trying to put together a list of those that are going to help you become a better researcher.
Our goal overall is to encourage people to get involved in peer review, help people get involved in peer review, make the process easier and more positive for researchers when they do peer review. Because as everybody would accept, fundamentally, many people do peer review and they make it into quite a negative process. So just a few concluding remarks. Joe, anything else we need to add before we close up shop today?
Yeah, I think one key component which is often dearly missing from peer review conversations and practices that we've discovered in our prep meetings was the unavailability of the data and the data sources, and even not explicitly enough described methodologies, which are essential to actually being capable of providing a thorough peer review in the first place. And with the publication pressure, many researchers in all parts of the world have unfortunately become accustomed to where we only look at what's written in the narrative, the research article, without considering much, or not even considering, is there an actual data set? Can I access that? Can I see the data? And if not, then why not? And there might be good reasons for that. But it must be possible to for a reviewer to also have enough expertise and understanding of the research topic to make an assessment of the approach of the research, the methodology, and have a glimpse on the data, primary, secondary, whatsoever. But that's actual peer review. And we don't see much of that these days, unfortunately. So we want to reintroduce that as a core practice.
Maria?
I think that it is, we're at the stage now where you can actually do a lot of things that we could before, because you have versioning, you have forking, you have open access being disseminated. We're just trying to make the best of the resources we have available now, and getting to a stage where you can have less of the really bad things that I've encountered recently with retractions and with paper mills and with fraudulent data and with image manipulation. Because that's one of the main issues, is that sometimes we don't know if peer reviewers let those things escape because they didn't know to point them out or because they didn't have access to resources that told them how they could assess them. So that would be a great way to end this, to incorporate resources we have available now and make everyone's job easier.
Absolutely. And speaking of ending things, we must end our stream because we've come up against our time limit. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Reviewer credits and access to perspectives. We will be sharing all of these resources in an open, transferable, commentable style over the next few days. Have a great afternoon, everybody. And thanks again for listening to our live stream today.
Thank you. My pleasure. See you soon.
Thanks for joining us to listen to this episode. Do let us know what you think. You can email us or connect with us on our social media channels, which you can find on our website at accesstoperspectives.org. Email us at info@accesstoperspectives.org or book a call to explore how we can support you with your research planning, management, and publishing. Welcome you again soon for our next episode. Until then, have a great time.